Hello, you're listening to So What, a podcast from Canadian Mennonite University. Welcome here. CMU is in Treaty 1 territory, Winnipeg, Manitoba. I am your host, Jonas Cornelson, in Treaty 7, Calgary, Alberta. So What is a show where I talk about what goes on at CMU, and I apply it all to life beyond campus. For this episode, life beyond campus is what it's all about. I met up with some old friends at a class of 2015 and surrounding years reunion. Our organizers, Anna Bigland-Pritchard and Rachel McEwen, had invited me to bring my microphone and ask our peers how their time at CMU resonates in their lives now. Going in, I had a hard time narrowing down a theme to collect stories on. And then, as I was doing my first interview, it hit me.
Being in PLD actually was like a shortcut to higher level design thinking that I don't think I would have gotten if I had gone to design school.
This is Matt Veith, class of 2013. And PLD, Participatory Local Development, is a course you might not find on the resume of most graphic designers, but it changed the way that Matt approaches his work in that field. We'll get more into how that happened, but this example gets at something about CMU that I've been thinking about since, well, my last couple of years there. See, there's a question we all probably got around the time we were graduating. What are you going to do with your degree? To me, that question feels transactional, like what job can you get? I actually talked about this when I spoke at graduation in 2016. I wanted to focus more on the skills, relationships, and ways of thinking that we had learned throughout our university experience. I thought the process of studying at CMU, how we learned as well as what we learned, was possibly even more important than the degrees we got in the end. Coming back to campus almost 10 years later for this reunion, I had a chance to compare my thoughts from back then with what some of my peers are doing now. And the way that Matt talked about the huge impact of an international development studies course on his graphic design work made me think I was onto something. But don't take it from me. Listen to Matt.
I can actually tell you exactly how this connection has gone for me between the work that what I studied at CMU and how I work. And it's not just something that's made my work better. It's actually, in some ways, complicated my work. For the better, but it's complicated it. When I took Participatory Local Development with Kenton, it opens your mind up to the fact that anything that can be done in a community, for a community, should also be done by the community. Like, you shouldn't come in with this idea that, like, I'm going to fix you and change you and do something on your behalf. And part of the challenge with design is a field that really prizes expertise. And I have repeatedly found myself in situations where I'm working on creating something for somebody, a client, a community, whatever. And I think about, how does this keep living its life in community? How do people care for this thing? How do people take ownership of it? Like, if I'm helping a nonprofit design a series of, you know, I don't know, Instagram posts, this is a very banal example. What's going to keep working for them? Because I don't feel like I need to be the one who's always I'm not the one who's coming in being like, this is what's good, this is what's bad, and you don't know how to do this.
Okay, this is a funny place to cut Matt off. In his defense, I'm doing the editing. He's not trying to make designers that didn't go to CMU sound super rude. But I wanted to point out that you can really hear how, even in the small tasks, Matt is always thinking about the client's relationship to the product as much as the technical elements or the quote-unquote right way to design something. You might have also noticed that Matt said his approach gets him in trouble sometimes. I asked him what he meant by that.
It's sort of this instinct to try and help the people I work for take ownership of not only the product, but the process. And that's gotten me in trouble sometimes because, you know, you get to a place where you're trying to be really egalitarian, like, you know, not assume people don't have a skill or not assume people can't understand something. Now they're saying, no, I've hired you to take care of this. But I do love getting to the point where you've really maxed out the extent to which the person you're working for can be involved in the work. I don't know if that makes sense. So, I mean, to say it more simply, it's like I want to involve people in the design process as much as I can because I want them to take ownership of it. And only after I've done that do I really go, okay, we've found the edge of what you're capable of, and now my work as an expert can begin.
What I understood from this is that a more egalitarian approach, as Matt put it, could also be more work, both for himself and the client. But that increased engagement does lead to increased ownership of the process and final product in the communities he's working for. Hold that thought. We'll get into a story about that later. Right now, I want to introduce Anna Bigland-Pritchard, whose story shares some common themes with Matt's. For Anna, who graduated in 2015, a deep desire to study music found a new voice, as it were, when she took courses in a field she had never heard of before CMU.
I didn't know what I expected from a music degree. I just was very blindly, like, I just had this sense that it really was the right place for me on, like, a deep spiritual level. I had this conviction. I kind of felt like there was a beam of light going, ah, when I showed up at CMU. It was just like, I was like, oh, these are my people. People who are, like, into thinking about God and faith, but who, for whom it orients them in, like, a social justice, climate kind of trajectory.
Yeah.
So it was a really good place specifically for me and where I was at, especially in my sort of kind of evangelical but questioning sort of place.
If you're wondering where the background noise went, Anna and I actually caught up on Zoom after the reunion because she was too busy running the show. Anyway, it was in this phase of questioning, really what university is all about, that Anna became close friends with people who were taking courses in peace and conflict transformation studies.
Yeah, I just, like, several friends were studying that, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. I've never learned anything about that. And I was just interested in figuring out how to do that in my own life, mm-hmm. how to do conflict and peace. I think I took PACTS maybe in my second year.
Okay.
Second or third, and I took Jerem Sawatzky's Intro to Peace Building and Conflict Transformation, and it was, the best course of my degree, and I did the best probably in that course than I did in the rest of the degree because I was so interested.
A lot of us may have had that kind of experience, whether it's a course you took, a book you read, or something else outside of what you're used to doing that just opened up insights you never expected. Anna found ways to build on this experience, including further coursework that connected peace building with her music studies.
I had to get some sort of credit for my music ministry concentration, and I was able to get it at the Canadian School of Peacebuilding one summer. Hmm. So I did that. It was called Faith, Music, and Interethnic Reconciliation. And Ivo Markovic, who was a Bosnian friar, taught it. And, like, peacebuilding through music mm-hmm. during the war and violence in Bosnia and Herzegovina in the 90s. And that course was, like, life-changing.
It sounds to me almost like your experience learning more about peace and conflict in an academic sense perhaps helped channel or synthesize some of your, like, deep passion for music with, like, a social justice concern.
I think that's very true. I think today people are more open to seeing, like, interdisciplinary connection than maybe we did even, like, 15 years ago. I used to have a hard time kind of justifying or explaining to people how I was, like, into the environment and queer rights and opera. And now it all just feels, like, really quite obvious, like creativity and care for the earth and social justice are all completely intertwined.
This is where I want to compare Anna and Matt's stories before we hear more from both of them about what these, say, CMU-ified approaches actually look like in their work now. When we went to CMU, interdisciplinary was a buzzword we kind of all laughed at, but maybe it makes more sense looking back now that we've actually built some of these connections out there. For Matt and Anna, I sensed that the process of connecting multiple subject areas at CMU really changed their creative and artistic work in ways that centered people and relationships as much as excellence or expertise. That might be easy to say, but it's harder to do. I asked Matt for more detail on how he makes the design process accessible for clients.
Yeah, there was one project I did. It was on a book called Germinating Conversations, which actually was published by CMU, Arasha, and MCC. And when I worked on that project, what was interesting is one thing I do in my design practice is whenever I come up with concepts for something, I will give them these names that essentially are evoking parallel concepts. So, like, the quirky checkbook or the well-worn traveler's notes or something like that to encapsulate what a concept looks like.
If you're wondering how quirky traveler's notes relate to designing a book, don't worry. I got you covered.
It's sort of like taking a few pieces of content from the book, styling them, then describing the styling choices in terms of what they evoke. So like this particular typeface is going to make the project feel more academic. This combination of layouts will imply, or level of detail will imply how far or close to a traditional book form that it is. And then after explaining all those things, giving them a name.
All right, that's a bit clear. Now here's Matt describing how that extra step of not only showing design ideas, but creating new language to talk about them worked with the group developing this book.
And in that process, I brought them through every step of how I was thinking about every concept. And because we did that work to sort of like really describe each of these concepts in their constituent components, all throughout the design process, people were able to call back and say, oh, yeah, that's like that. That's like the smart, weary traveler kind of idea, or that's this. And it was creating this really lush space of these symbols I was using to describe the work I was doing that I gave to the people on the project. And so as a result of doing that, everybody owned the process. And by the time we made decisions, I would hear people making comments about why this worked and why it didn't work. And it was because I had actually given them new language to talk about the specific design work we were doing. And it stopped being about, I'm designing this book for you. It's, we're designing this book together, and I am just a few steps ahead of you in thinking about the process.
I have to say, I was really impressed by Matt's approach. It sounded labor-intensive, yes, but it also sounded much more rich, or lush, as he put it, than simply doing the work for the client as a hired expert. With Anna, these connections between music, peace-building, ecology, etc., have been numerous and varied throughout her career. But it just so happened, the evening we were talking was right after a weekend event she had done that really leaned on both the high level of musical skill and the emotional intuition of a great peace and conflict workshop facilitator.
This past weekend, as BC, one of several BC Culture Days ambassadors for 2025, I was hosting a workshop called Creative Care for Eco-Anxiety, a choral collage workshop, which was an expressive arts workshop that was 3 hours long. It was at this beautiful learning gardens school and space called the Horticultural Center of the Pacific in Saanich on the Kwangan territory. I live in Victoria. And the workshop was, I had 16 participants, and it was an opportunity to hold space for ecological grief and anxiety for whatever was coming up for people. And then to use the arts and mindfulness, creative mindfulness practices as a way to support that grief, that anxiety, maybe transform it a little bit, find a sense of connection and community, camaraderie with others who are feeling the same way. And it was, it was really beautiful. We started in circle and just shared a bit about ourselves and people. That would have been enough. Everyone was delighted with each other. So many interesting people who care about the earth. Good to remember we're not alone. And I did a sound bath. Part of my BC Culture Days role was that I got some mentorship and funding to work on my artistic practice, which has recently included vocal looping. So I had a mentor that I was working with on my looping skills. So I did a vocal looping sound bath, and we went sound hunting. Everyone went into the gardens and found a sound, and then we shared our sounds. And then we started doing some deep listening, harmony building, choral collage creating outside. So exploring vocalizations that either were emotional or were imitations of the natural world around us, expressing anxiety or fear or whatever emotions were coming up for people. And then we did a little imagination exercise to envision what we really long for in our relationship with the earth and what our deepest hopes are. And can we be brave enough to have deep hope? And so then we created a harmonic choral collage expressing that as well together.
Okay, if some of these things like vocal looping, sound hunting, and harmonic choral collage sound either completely unfamiliar or a bit scary to you, I don't blame you. As I hinted at before, it would and did take years of musical practice to put those kinds of elements in the service of working through ecological anxiety and deep hope. To use a word Matt talked about, expertise, there is a high level of that going on here in what Anna's doing, but it's being used to create an experience with a group of people, not a performance for them as you might expect from a classically trained musician. And hey, I'm not trying to give CMU all the credit for making Anna a great musician who's also emotionally intelligent, or Matt a very capable designer that's good at running workshops. But both of them told me about experiences they've had since graduating that suggested their education at CMU prepared them well for changes in their respective fields. Matt talked about learning a quote-unquote new way of thinking in design studies and realizing it was a lot like the development course he took a decade earlier.
There's this thing that IDEO created called human-centered design. It's a sort of framework for thinking about how to do design. And the more you dig into human-centered design, the more you realize it's a form of participatory development. That's what it is. And the design field has been sort of like, especially graphic design, doesn't always lean heavily toward that kind of work because it is very informed by advertising. It's different if you're talking engineering, things like that. But graphic design is a world dominated sort of culturally by the world of advertising. And so I think in some respects, being in PLD actually was like a shortcut to higher level design thinking that I don't think I would have gotten if I had gone to design school.
Matt went on to say that people he knows in the field now that went by other avenues didn't really get that same human-centered focus that just sort of came naturally at CMU. And Anna also told me that her time at CMU, inside and outside the classroom, taught her lessons that music grads from elsewhere didn't necessarily get within their university experience.
I don't think most of my colleagues who went to not CMU have had the same opportunity to explore interdisciplinary ideas. I think I've noticed, since 2020, more opera folks have started to become more conscious and aware of how we are artists and our role can, or in my opinion, should be to bring community connection and also resistance. But I think for a lot of people, it's kind of a new concept. It's not common that in your music degree that you get to learn about peace building and conflict transformation and social justice and environmental stuff. So I think a lot of it was, I didn't take that many PACTS courses, but I was invested and I had community and friends who were really ingrained in that program. And so I learned so much just from those friendships, just from living in residence and being part of the community.
What Anna said at the end there, that simply being part of the social fabric of CMU changed the way she looked at things, is something that came up in many of the other conversations I had at and after our alumni reunion weekend. My friend Sean talked about simply being able to form deeper friendships in adulthood because of the late night dorm conversations that fostered a unique kind of vulnerability and connection. The stories I heard from Matt and Anna were the most intertwined, so I decided to shape the episode around them. But I'm grateful for all the conversations I had with my peers that weekend in September, 10-ish years after graduating, because they all affirmed what I was getting at in the beginning, the great value of the skills, relationships, and ways of thinking we built in the process of doing our degrees at CMU. Okay, I'm starting to feel like I'm saying the same things over and over again, and I've also said this before, like long before this podcast was a thing. When I got up on stage at graduation 2016 and questioned the very worth of the question, what are you going to do with your degree? Did I make this whole podcast episode now just to prove I was right? Do you want to hear the last few lines of my valedictorian speech? I don't, but in the interest of full disclosure, here we go.
But back to our original question, what are you going to do with your degree? If what I've shared so far shows anything, it shows that what we do going forward in all parts of life can't be separated from the knowledge that has grown in us during our time at CMU. Education is a great gift, and we can all respond in gratitude by humbly sharing the knowledge and insight we have gained and receiving from others, by showing love to all of those we meet, living by the Creator's grace, Christ's example, and the Spirit's hope in a broken world. That is what you can really do with a degree. Thanks be to God.
Okay, that was all very earnest and theological. Way to go past me. But based on the stories that I heard this past September, 2025, especially Matt and Anna's that I shared today, I still think I was onto something. And if you subscribe to the monthly CMU email newsletter, as I do, you'll also know these stories keep happening. I've read great pieces from current students on the connections between peace building and mathematics, or smart business practices serving the collective good. CMU's changed a lot since we were there, but what makes it special isn't about one course or one group of students or professor or point in time, and that's good to know. This episode wasn't supposed to be like an ad for CMU, but I will acknowledge it's feeling a bit like that. There are, of course, lots of places to find these sorts of cross-disciplinary experiences, and whether or not you're connected to CMU, I'm curious where you found them. Drop me a line on our Facebook page at facebook.com/sowhatpodcast. Thanks to Matt and Anna especially, and to everyone else who talked to me for this episode. Thanks also to Daryl Neustater-Barg at CMU for mixing assistance. Speaking of thanks, this is going to be my last episode for a while. My life has changed to the point where even doing this every 3 months feels like a lot right now. I'm grateful to several folks at CMU who have had a hand in this project. We've published around 30 episodes since 2021. You can head to cmu.ca/sowhatpodcast to hear all those past episodes, and they will also stay available wherever you get podcasts. But most of all, thanks to you for listening. Over these years, I've had lots of encouragement, insightful comments, and relatively few complaints. I appreciate you sticking with me through all kinds of different conversations. I'm sure we'll talk again sometime. My name is Jonas Cornelson, signing off for now. Thanks again.